Welcome to the Breakfast Leadership Show, where we interview global thought leaders on business, leadership, and life. Here's your host, keynote speaker, best-selling author, and chief burnout officer of the Breakfast Leadership Network, Michael Levitt.
Welcome back. I've got Kelly Macklin online. Kelly, how are you?
Hi, good. How are you doing?
Thanks so much for being here. Really looking forward to this conversation. So for those that aren't familiar with your work, why don't you share a little bit about you and then we'll dive into the conversation.
So I'm Kelly Macklin. I am the author of the book, Work Life Well Lived. I am also the CEO and co-founder of Motives Met. And at Motives Met, we really empower people to create their best work life and workplace with tools like our human needs assessment. And it was really my journey through ill-being at work that led me to the work I do today and really the dedication to our mission to create a work world where we're human first and well-being is truly at the core.
Critical, crucial work that you're doing. And I see it every day, you know, when I'm going somewhere or I'm going to downtown or going to where there's a lot of workers on their way to work. You can see it in their faces and in their bodies, quite frankly, where some of them just are walking zombies. And it's not because they stayed up too late last night. It's just they're just drained from the work. And the work in itself, from a physical standpoint, may not be as heavy as somebody that works on a farm that's moving hay bales all day. But it's definitely taking a physical toll on them because of the mental strain and just the place not being a healthy place to work. So, you know, what got you into this? And you had referred to it briefly there a moment ago about, you know, your own experience with some illness via work. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah. So really, my journey starts all the way back from when I was a kid and seeing my mom go through a really tough and toxic work environment. And it was so interesting because I saw such extremes. On the one hand, early on, work lit my mom up. She had so much pride and purpose in what she did. She was one of the few women SVPs of research at one of the largest global advertising agencies. And so she worked a lot and her job wasn't perfect, but most of her needs were well met and she loved the work that she did. But then when her company was bought out, everything changed. And I would see my mom getting physically sick before work. I would hear her crying. And it was so tough to see someone who had given 25 years of their life to this company, day in and day out, to be treated the way she was treated and to go through what she went through. But I think so many of us can struggle with this belief system that that's just the way it is. You have to toughen up. You have to charge on. And one day, maybe you can earn well-being at work. You can earn that health and happiness, you know, with enough blood, sweat, and tears. So I sadly kind of went on a similar journey and ended up in what I call like Mad Men for the modern times work environment. And it took hitting some real lows before I woke up and went, this just is not how work should be. And that's really what pivoted me to focus on well-being in my personal life and in my work life. And I moved from Chicago to California and got deeper into research, human behavior, cognitive behavioral therapy, meditation, and mindfulness. And eventually it led me to focusing specifically on well-being at work.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't miss those Chicago winters. They are brutal, brutal. And, you know, I grew up in Detroit and worked and lived in Chicago for 6 years. And the best way to describe it to people that have never experienced it is imagine the coldest air you could possibly endure. Getting inside your bones and swilling around inside your bones, you know, moving all the marrow around, and you're just in so much agony and pain. So moving to California, yeah, it's, oh yeah,
There's no other. I love summertime Chicago, but winter, and in the book, I try to recreate one of these nights where I'm running through the streets of Chicago to catch one of the last trains home after being at work from like 6 a.m. and it's like 11:30 p.m. and just the bone chilling cold as I'm like running towards Union Station.
Yeah. Yep, man, that wind, yeah, especially around Sears Tower and Union. And I know it's Willis Tower now, but come on, I got to call it Sears Tower.
I would.
Yeah. So it's like, the wind through there and you're running. And of course, you know, you can slip on ice. I don't miss it at all. But one of the things that I've noticed, throughout my career is, and I can think back, and of course, reflection, is one of those beautiful things where once you step out of the situation you're away from it a while, you can see, okay, yeah, that was a really decent place to work, and that was a toxic cesspool. And you look and go, okay, what was causing it? And sometimes it's just, the culture of the organization. Sometimes it can be just a handful of individuals that are creating this nightmare. And, I think back in, one of the things you mentioned too, brought back somebody that used to know. They were a successful salesperson. They were crushing it. And similar situation, new ownership came in, new management came in, and it's as if they completely forgot how to sell. Their confidence was beaten down so much by these people that they couldn't do it anymore. And it was fascinating and sad to watch, going, okay, what caused that? And a lot of it is, and I know this in the work that you do, is there's so much work that we need to do internally. And I think that's where your assessment does an amazing job, is just kind of figuring out, okay, what makes us tick and what makes us need things? Because there could be two people that are doing the same job and their needs are completely different. And I see that with people that burn out all the time, where somebody is really prone to burning out and they could have a colleague, same demographic, same job, all that stuff, that in all likelihood probably won't ever burn out. And you go, okay, well, what's the dynamic change between the two of them? And it's like, a lot of it is just their self-belief, their upbringing, experiences, how they perceive things, all kinds of different things.
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head there with, we all have different human needs. And that's essentially what our research discovered, because my mom is actually one of the other co-founders of our company. But we, in about 2017, this is pre-pandemic, we went, oh my God, people are talking about well-being and work in the same sentence. Like, that was not a thing not that long ago. But then we were like, why is stuff still so bad? Because it's bad. And again, this was even before COVID. So we're like, okay, we have wellness tech and we have all these CEOs preaching well-being and all these books, but why are we missing the mark? And really, that just began us, began our journey to go, well, what does it even mean to be well at work? Like, what does it mean to have a people-first thriving culture? What does health and happiness at work even mean? And what we discovered is the world really didn't know. And that what we have traditionally been taught about health and happiness at work is wrong. And that's a big problem, because goal clarity equals goal achievement. So if we don't know what the goal is, if we don't have shared meaning and mindset around it, then getting there is going to be so much more difficult. And there is so much noise out there to navigate through. There's one social media influencer telling you it's about hustling to reach your potential. But a different one is like, nah, screw the hustle. It's all about work-life balance. It's all about working wherever you want in the world. And there's research study after research study that will say, your employees leave because of a bad boss. No, they leave because they don't have growth opportunities. No, they leave because they don't feel valued. And so you go, well, what am I supposed to do with that? If I'm not super happy at work, or I just want to make my work life better, what does that information really offer me at the end of the day? If I'm a manager of a team, how do I make sure my team is happy and wants to stay? And we went, okay, well, we gotta figure this out, because this is a really big missing part of the puzzle. And essentially what our research showed is that well-being at work is when people's most important human needs, what we call motives, are met. And we actually identified 28 of these different needs: psychological, emotional, and social needs at work. So there aren't just five the way that article wants to tell you, these are the five things your team needs, or this is what you should care about most. There's 28 of them. So for example, we have autonomy, flexibility, growth, belonging, purpose, prestige, work-life harmony, balance, peace. These are all motives. But exactly what you said, Michael, of what matters most to you, what drives you to be well and perform well at work, is going to be different than what I need most. But the problem is, we're not always even aware of what we need most. We all have blind spots. We especially have blind spots when it comes to the people we work with and the people we lead. And we're all so busy just getting through our day, that we're certainly not stopping and being mindful of these needs at work. So that's what really led us to develop an algorithm and build our human needs assessment to help people uncover what are my top motives driving me? What are the top motives of my team? And then now how can we talk about them? How can we ask ourselves good questions around them and share what we call our motive stories and build our well-being action plans from them? So that's really what led us to develop this tool, because we felt it was so missing and needed in the world.
I agree. And it reminds me of a time, and I've shared this on my show several times, where several years ago, I took over a healthcare organization that was averaging 86% turnover annually. That's almost 9 out of 10 people leaving. And these are master's level and above clinicians that were just up and leaving because it was a toxic environment. And so I went into it because, you know, the opportunity came up and I said, sure, this sounds like fun, you know, not knowing what the heck I was doing, but I did. But it was more of a, okay, how do you unsink a ship? And that, because it was sinking quick, and it's like, if it was getting a reputation around the community and all of that, I'm like, okay, what do we do? And the first thing I did was just, I met with people, you know, the people who were still there. And, you know, I asked them, okay, if you were in my seat, what would you do? And it was, you know, and I told them, I'm not sharing this with the board of directors. This is just you and me as fellow humans on this big blue round ball floating around in space. It's like, what would you do? And I made notes of it. I took notes, literally. They saw me writing things down. And there was a lot of low-lying fruit that I could adjust or change pretty quickly. So I did. And that was the first thing. It's like, okay, I want to build trust first. And that's going to take time, but let's listen to them and demonstrate that I'm actually going to listen to them. And secondly, you get to know the people, like, you know, your assessment does. Wish I would have had the assessment back then. It was because it would have made things even easier to do it. But I think what, you know, the grand scheme of things, what I did was I just got to know people, and I knew them well enough to know what motivated them, what they needed, knew when they were off. And what I mean by off is like not their normal self, I guess. And just ask them, you know, what's going on? Need something? You know, what can I do to help? Whether it's, you know, maybe a couple of days off or working remotely before it was cool, whatever the case may be. And just, it did that. And what that did was it built that level of trust. And after a year, the turnover was reduced to 6% annual. And people asked, okay, how much money did you give them? I didn't give a single raise. I didn't give them any extra money. Because I know what that is as a motivator. It's a very short-term motivator for most people. They forget about it in a couple of weeks because they've adjusted their budget accordingly to the new money. So it wasn't going to get me anywhere by just doing that. It's like, no, I need to make this place better for these individuals. And how do I do that? And we did that and got to the point where we were able to expand, bring on new people, recruit new physicians. And it was an underserviced area too. So this is a community that had been lacking access to great healthcare for a long, long time. So, you know, we were doing great things and, you know, the reputation changed. And it was just by me asking, okay, what do you need? You know, what would you like to do? What would you do differently here? And, you know, they got creative. They were creating new programs that we weren't doing before. And it was a fun experience to go through that. It wasn't fun in the beginning. It definitely wasn't, but you know, I had the right mop bucket and the broom and the vacuum to be able to clean up the things I needed to clean up and just, you know, change things around. And I didn't, you know, let go a lot of people either for that, you know, turnover to change. You know, most of the people that were there when I was there remained and stayed, or they got really good at what they did. They got promoted into a different sector in the healthcare system. And, you know, people were mad at me because they're like, you're letting all the good ones leave. I said, no, they're too good for us. We got to let them make their mark somewhere else. We'll find somebody else. Don't worry. And we did. We brought in great people because we knew what to look for. And we knew the dynamics of the team. And it just made it for a much better place to work. And it was one of those moments that, you know, I probably should be more proud of the things that I've done in my career. But that is one that I will say, yeah, I'm very proud of the work that was accomplished there, because it made it healthier. And it was just one of those things where it's like, okay, if I can do it, why can't anybody else do it? And I think that's why it's so important that you, in your mom and in your book and in this assessment, is so critically important for organizations, because if you have a healthy organization, your products and services are going to be better. You're going to grow and expand. Everybody's going to make more money. It's going to, which we all need right now, as if we haven't already needed it. But come on, it just it the world would be so much better. Think of all the and I definitely want to give you time to respond, but because I threw a lot out here. But you know, think if even if there was a 20% improvement across the board of the health of workplaces, what that would do for new products and services that we would love to have. It just 20% increase. You know, you turn it, you know, even higher, it's amazing what we would get. So love to hear your thoughts.
Yes. No, absolutely. I mean, first of all, it's so epic what you did. And, you know, the problem is not every leader knows how to do that the way you do. So if we don't give leaders and managers the tools, then to be honest, it's so unfair to have the level of expectation that we have on them. But it absolutely is not just about the financial salary. Like you're saying, it's about the emotional salary at the end of the day. And that's what research proves time and time again. And that's what our research shows. But just sitting down and taking the time to get to know someone as a human, getting to know the human needs that make them tick and how they're doing, that alone goes a huge way. Huge way. That is what we've seen time and time again with leaders using the assessment with their teams, with their employees. Is, oh my God, I learned all this new stuff about them I never would have known. Oh, wow, we connected on a different level. Wow, we had a human conversation. And if you ask better questions, you're going to get better answers. So sure, it is so valuable to sit down with someone and go, are you happy here? Why or why not? Okay, that's a start. And our research shows 33% of people said in the last year that conversation has never happened. And 31% said only one. So let's just start there. That's a good conversation to have. But an even better conversation to have is knowing what really matters to Michael and then asking you questions related to that. You know, so if passion is the top need for you, like what percent of your time do you spend doing work you're passionate about? You know, do we need to tip the balance more that way? So, you know, the more you get to know people, the more you're going to be able to actually come up with better solutions and support them from a leadership standpoint. And our research shows that not only when these motives are met at work, are people more likely to stay, but they are more likely to stay for the long haul over time. So like you were saying, it's just a win-win for everybody. When needs are thriving at work, good stuff happens. When the needs are drowning at work, it's not good. And sometimes we overcomplicate things. And in a way, it really is simple, but it doesn't mean it's easy. And that is true. And that's why I think, again, giving especially leaders the right tools is so important, because saying, hey, get to know your employees as humans, make sure they want to stay here and that they're happy. Okay, great. But a leader goes, what am I supposed to do with all that? And by the way, I have like 100 things I'm supposed to get done today. So give me something that makes it effective and easy and meaningful for this to happen. And that's really the goal of what we've done with our research, because research and insights is awesome. But if you can't put them into action, then it's not going to move the needle in the way you want to be able to move the needle.
And that's what executives and leaders need, is they need, you know, because they've got that 100 item to-do list this morning, is, you know, pinpoint directions on how to do it, break it up into actionable steps that they can do. And it's not a set it and forget it thing either. It's an ongoing thing. You make it part of the DNA of how you run things. And when you do that, what happens, and I see this time and time again, is you end up creating leaders within your organization, which then can take the strain off of you as the leader. You delegate, and you delegate because you figure out, okay, what motivates Sarah? What motivates Steve? What motivates Andrew? And what motivates Crystal? Okay. And you go, okay, what on my desk that I'm doing could they potentially help with, or maybe even take over? If you have something that they can take over and do a great job, and spoiler, sometimes they do it better than you do, leader. I know that hurts, but put the ego to the side for a moment. A lot of times they do things a lot better. I know that. That was one of those things where it's like, well, I know I suck at this. Here, do you handle that, please. Thank you. You know, and of course, I just because of who I am, I give proper credit and say, oh, this wouldn't be possible if Sarah didn't, you know, work on this project. So please acknowledge her for this. And, you know, it's just, again, it's understanding that as a leader, you can't do anything without a team. And the team needs a leader to guide them on that. So it's an entity to move together. And unfortunately, and I know you see this all the time, there's so many different silos that pop up either naturally or just through communication issues or, you know, you name it. There's a billion reasons. But what happens is it starts adding all these barriers that make it harder to do things. And of course, remote work created that as well, because we didn't really, you know, we didn't really spend enough time to go, how do we make remote work work for us? It was more of a, it was thrown on our lap 4 years ago and say, here you go, you know, everybody go home and work. What the heck is Zoom? How do I use it? Where's the button? And like, oh, you know, my 2-year-old just came in not wearing anything. Okay, well, well, where's that blur filter thing? You know, so all those things that we endured over the pandemic, you know, or we can laugh about it now. We weren't necessarily laughing about it then, but we do now. So I think, again, it just, you know, the work that you're doing is so critically important, and it would change employees and employers for the better and reduce the strain on every department, including HR, of having to hire people all the time. And we just get better stuff, and it's a better experience for everybody involved.
Yeah, I love what you were saying about taking the strain away from leaders, because I think another thing that's tough is leaders have it hammered in their head. You must lead well-being and mental health and happiness and do a million other things and make sure people aren't burnt out or stressed out and do culture and you're the biggest influence. And yes, if you are a leader, you have a huge responsibility, and it's tough. And that is 100% true. And you're a huge part of the equation. But actually, a big part of what you need to do is share in that responsibility and do it well. Because we say that well-being at work is co-created. At the end of the day, it happens when individuals and work peers and leaders show up not only for themselves, but also one another to keep these 28 needs healthy at work. If you think about any need, whether it's, you know, work-life harmony, if you think it's appreciation, if it's culture, the degree that that need is going to be met is going to be impacted by other people. So as a leader, when you bring people in and share this framework and show, hey, there's 28 of these needs, everybody needs different things, and some of them conflict. You were talking about remote work, flexibility and peer connection and belonging. Those can be really tough. You're going to have some people on your team who really don't care a lot about that in-person human connection. And then you're going to have people who do. So there is going to be this internal and external tension between these different motives at work. So you have to get everybody to share in this mindset and belief system around showing up and supporting one another, but also advocating for their own needs. And when you do that, people start to have compassion for you. And that's really cool to see, of employees going, oh, you know, I guess it's not that easy for everything to work. Yeah, there's 28 of these things. It's pretty tough. Ooh, I get it's complicated. This person on the team needs something so different than what I need. And again, it creates this collective mindset that if we want our best workplace with well-being, everybody's got to give a crap. Everybody's got to show up. And it takes away some of that emotional labor from the leaders and puts it on other people, which is what needs to happen if you want well-being at work. But then, of course, you have to hold those people accountable. Right? You have to follow through and hold people to that standard. But that's been a huge thing that we've heard from leaders that's really cool of, oh my God, it really is this mindset shift at the core, at the heart of our organization or our team. And that is huge.
Yeah, it's incredibly important work, and organizations need to be burning up your phone with orders and work with your team and getting the book and the assessment, because I know what a healthy organization looks like when it wasn't healthy, and it's just such a better experience for everybody involved. It reduces the strain for everybody, and it just makes it so much better for all of us. So love this conversation. Where can people find more about you, your work, the book, and everything else?
You can check out our website, motivesmet.com, and you'll see the assessment on there. But if you purchase the book anywhere books are sold, you get a free code to take the human needs assessment, which is pretty cool. And I'm also active on platforms like LinkedIn. My handle on Instagram is KellyMackin_MotivesMet.
Awesome. I'll definitely have that in the show notes. So Kelly, thank you so much again for your time. And more importantly, the work that you're doing. The world desperately needs it. So it's always good when we can bring awareness to our audience of the important work that's being done by you and your team.
Thank you so much. This has been a great conversation.
Thanks for listening to the Breakfast Leadership Show, part of the Breakfast Leadership Network. Visit breakfastleadership.com for tips on empowering your business and your life.